We have all been swayed in one direction or another by the voice of reason in our minds. But what do you do when that voice tries convincing you that unspeakable acts are acceptable and that murder is the only option? My name is Nico Fontaine, and what I'm about to tell you is probably going to sound a little strange. You have been warned. Welcome to Ghosts, Etc. The Amityville Horror is a 1979 American supernatural horror film based on the J. Anson book of the same name, published in 1977. The story is based on the alleged experiences of the Lutz family, who bought a new home in Amityville, New York. But that home had a very dark past, as a mass murder had been committed there only a year before. That home was the scene of a gruesome crime that took place on November 13, 1974, where 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo Jr. shot and killed all six members of his family in the middle of the night as they slept. That home remained unoccupied for 13 months, and in November of 1975, Ronald DeFeo Jr. was found guilty on six counts of second-degree murder. And 1 month after the conviction, and with a brief disclaimer from their real estate agent, George and Kathy Lutz and their three children moved into that home at 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville, New York. But before we get into the Lutz's experience, let's go back a little bit and try to understand what happened during the DeFeo murders. Well, when DeFeo's trial began on October 14th of 1975, he and his defense lawyer mounted an affirmative defense of insanity, with DeFeo claiming that he killed his family in self-defense because he heard their voices plotting against him, that he heard a voice in his head that made him do it. Well, the insanity plea was supported by the psychiatrist for the defense by the name of Dr. Daniel Schwartz. The psychiatrist for the prosecution, though, Dr. Harold Zolin, maintained that although DeFeo was an abuser of heroin and LSD and he had an antisocial personality disorder, he was completely aware of every single action he did during the time of the crime. So, insanity was not a major factor here. He was obviously not convicted and found guilty, rather, or not guilty, on the basis of insanity. He heard voices that he believed were his family plotting against him. He was convinced that they were coming to get him. Now, the reason I bring this up and the reason I like to talk about this particular factoid is that, yes, the Lutz family experienced a lot of things, you know, post-murders that could be accounted as a haunting, a residual haunting, based upon the fact that people died in that home. But this particular history lends a little bit more to the fact that what if there was something already there that convinced Ronald DeFeo Jr. that killing his family was the only way? I'm going to let you guys kind of marinate on that while I go on with the rest of the story. So getting back to the purchase of the home by George and Kathleen Lutz. Now, they purchased the home at an extremely low bargain price of $80,000. That also included most, if not all, of the DeFeo family furniture. So it was a fully furnished home for $80,000. Now, sounds like it's a pretty penny, but the home was huge. It was a 5-bedroom house built in this like Dutch colonial style. It also had a swimming pool. It had a boathouse. Hell, it was even located on like a canal where you can take your boat in and out. Had plenty of space for their 3 children. Had plenty of space for their dog, Harry. You know, so it was a ridiculously great deal. It was the perfect home. I mean, both of these people, you know, George and Kathleen, were coming from 2 different homes. Kathleen and her 3 children from a previous marriage, and then George, who had just married. They had just married. Just in July of that year. So less than 6 months. And obviously they were fully aware of the murders that took place there. Again, the real estate agent kind of gave them that as a deciding point, like whether or not that was a make or break for them. And they decided it was all good. That was in the past. Let's go ahead and start a new life together. Well, a friend of George learned about that history as well. He insisted that they have the house blessed. So George, who himself was a non-practicing Methodist, had zero experience, of what that would entail, like what a blessing would be. And yet Kathy, she was also a non-practicing Catholic. So she was able to explain the process. And in that, George knew a Catholic priest named Father Ray, who agreed to carry the house blessing. So they get that done. So Father Ray comes in, blesses the house. So the only thing, though, that kind of red flagged is that when Father Ray did the first flick of holy water and began to pray, he heard a very masculine, deep voice demand that he get out. So, like, he leaves the house, right? And he doesn't mention this incident to George or Kathy. He doesn't say anything about the weird voice he heard upstairs. And on December 24th of 1975, the father decides to call George Lutz and advise him to stay out of the 2nd floor room where he heard that mysterious voice. Now, this was the former bedroom of 2 of the deceased children that DeFeo murdered. Kathy had planned to use that as a sewing room. But, you know, they were advised not to use that room specifically. Well, following the visit, Father Ray allegedly developed an extremely high fever. He got blisters on his hands, something that he attributed to similar signs of like the stigmata. And if you're not familiar with what the stigmata is a term used by Christians to describe the manifestation of bodily wounds, scars, and pain in locations corresponding to the crucifixion wounds of Jesus Christ, such as the hands, the wrists, the feet. An individual bearing the wounds of stigmata is referred to as a stigmatist or a stigmatic. But let's get back to the topic at hand. So again, he basically felt very ill after that. So after that point, they started to experience very minimal events. And this was, I say minimal because it started out kind of on the low, kind of, you know, off the radar, just very like coincidental things, and then slowly progressed. So here's a kind of a list of experiences that they experienced. Not limited to this list. There's plenty more. I just kind of picked out a couple of ones that really stood out to me. One of the big ones was the house was plagued with swarms of flies. Why this is odd, it was during the winter time. It was outside of season for flies. So that is a huge demonic, dare I say even devil sign, is a just swarms of flies. In the home, specifically in that second floor bedroom. George, the father, would also wake up around 3:15 every morning, and he would go out and check the boathouse. You know, why is that significant? Well, later on, he discovers that that's approximately the time when the DeFeo murders happened. So it's interesting that he's kind of reliving the time frame of that. Now, I bring that up for two reasons. One, of course, the DeFeo murders do kind of play, you know, with the minds of the people there who are living there. So it's not out of the question to say that that could be part of the haunting as well. Definitely fuels it. But like I said, I feel like I have, you know, an intuition or kind of like this sense that something was there way before the DeFeos were murdered. Also, 3 a.m. Tends to be what we call the witching hour. This is where like odd things happen. Don't know why, 100%. I can probably look it up and give you a better answer in a later video of what the witching hour is, but it's just coincidental that things happen all the time. So in folklore, the witching hour is approximately about 3:07 a.m. It can go as far as to 3:30 a.m. But in folklore, the witching hour or the devil's hour is a time of night associated with supernatural events. Creatures such as witches, demons, and ghosts are thought to appear and to be at their most powerful. Black magic is thought to be most effective at this time as well. So that's kind of a brief definition of what the witching hour is. So again, that corresponds with that. What's another thing that they experience? Well, one of the weird things, Kathy, the wife, would feel a sensation of being embraced in a very loving manner, but by an unseen force. That's just kind of weird. I'm not going to lie. Another sign of what I, again, demonics and devil's presence, that there were cold spots and odors of perfume and odors of excrement in areas of the house where there's no wind drafts, there's no way that piping or anything could be leaking. Essentially, there was no way to explain the source of these things. That is also a very interesting sense. Another demonic thing that came up is during a morning where George and Kathy were lighting a fire at the fireplace and burned into the back out of soot to the back of the fireplace was what they described as a demon, the head of a demon with half its head blown out. Creeptastic. Then another one is their daughter, their five-year-old daughter, Missy, developed an imaginary friend by the name of Jody. And Jody was a demonic pig-like creature with glowing red eyes. We know that later on because George sees the manifestation of Jody in a window while he's outside. He looks up at Missy's room and sees that pig-like creature behind Missy. He, of course, runs upstairs to see what's going on. Missy's fast asleep in bed. Then he looks over and a little rocking chair that's by her bed is slowly rocking back and forth. Super creeptastic. George would also hear like music downstairs while being upstairs, would run downstairs and obviously the music would stop. He would hear sounds of the door downstairs, the front door, opening and slamming loudly enough to wake everybody up. But of course, no one else heard it, just him. Just all these weird signs. There's ectoplasm, there's like green gelatin like slime ooze that came from the walls in the hallway and also from the keyhole to the playroom in the attic. You know, and that could be described as ectoplasm, essentially a residual, you know, thing left behind, usually in the form of like a mucus or slime consistency. You know, again, going into the demonics, they had a cross hung up in the living room and, it revolves upside down. An upside down cross is a sign of demonics, the sign of, you know, the devil essentially, poking fun at, you know, Christianity and Jesus and things of that nature. Also gave off a very sour smell, gross decaying smells, again, signs of demonics. Anyways, so after the sighting that something was obviously wrong with their house, right? Stuff that they couldn't explain rationally. George and Kathy Lutz came to the conclusion that they should attempt to do a blessing of their own. And that took place on January 8th, 1976. George held a silver crucifix while both of them recited the Lord's Prayer. So this is great. This is, I mean, you can do a house blessing. That's whatever. They're not trying to do an exorcism. But the issue is neither one of them are practicing, you know, anything in their religion. So the fact that there's no real belief behind their end of it kind of makes what they're doing a lost cause, essentially. So anyways, they proceed to recite the Lord's Prayer, and then while they're in the living room, George hears a chorus of voices, massive voices, literally just saying, "Will you stop?" And he heard it. Kathy does not. And I feel like as well that George is getting a lot of this. George, I forgot to mention too, George resembles a lot physically of what Ronald DeFeo Jr. looks like. And it almost seems like the entity in the home is attaching themselves to George. And George becomes a little bit more irate. He becomes a little more, you know, edgy and kind of, you know, short-tempered and stuff like that throughout the time that they're in the home. It's gradual, but it definitely escalates towards the end. So by mid-January 1976, after another attempt at a house blessing by George and Kathy, they experience what turned out to be the final night in their house. So the Lutzes declined to give a full account of the events that took place on this occasion, but they described it completely as just being too frightening. This, of course, in the film would have been, you know, taken through Hollywood, and they would have given you a nice show to kind of describe what too frightening really meant. But truly, the Lutzes have never stated what they saw or what they experienced. So after getting in touch with Father Ray, the Lutzes decided to take some belongings and to stay at Kathy's mom's house nearby, you know, a few cities over down in Deer Park, New York. So until, you know, essentially until they had everything sorted out with the problems in that house. So they claimed, though, that the phenomena followed them there. In the book, Anson describes a greenish black slime coming up the staircase towards them. So on January 14, 1976, George and Kathy Lutz and their three children and their dog, Harry, decided to leave 112 Ocean Avenue, and they left all their stuff behind, right? Now I think it's interesting that it says that this thing followed them, right? So something attached, and I have the assumption that it attached to the father, because he was the one really experiencing a majority of this stuff and getting the physical symptoms of what's going down, in that house, right? So when something attaches to you, again, usually class one, class twos, and class threes don't attach themselves. They're residual, they're interactive, or they're like mischievous poltergeists. When you get into like demonics, that stuff can attach to you. Specifically, that they were non-practicing Christians, essentially, made them kind of an easy target, considering they knew and were well aware of, you know, demonics and, you know, good, bad, heaven, hell, you know, whatever entails with Christianity. They just chose not to practice it, which kind of makes them a target. It's kind of an interesting thing. I'll go more into that in a later episode, but essentially renouncing one's faith makes you a target. So they decide to leave, and a moving guy the next day goes and to go pick up, you know, remove their possessions from the house, and he reports nothing. No paranormal phenomena, nothing out of place or anything weird or eerie in the home. So what do we think that they're dealing with? So again, based on assessment, I think there was a combination of things, because even Kathy was experiencing the she was having like dreams and stuff like that about the DeFeo murders, about those type of things. So I truly believe there was a residual based on how dramatic and how sudden all those deaths occurred. There could have been a residual haunting from that. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Again, though, the voices and stuff like that prior to that, I think has to do with a demonic entity in that home. Not saying it's the devil specifically, but a very, you know, a lot of these signs of demonics scream demonic hierarchy, lean more towards the devil. So swarm of flies, demonic pig-like animal, these like odors of excrement and just, you know, essentially the smelling of death in the home with no source. There's no source that can be used to describe. So I believe it was a demonic possession in the home that may have, again, attached itself to the Lutzes. That being said, the home has been on the market and sold many times between 1976 and I think the last sale was in 2016. The home has drastically gone down in price. It went up. It was obviously $80,000 back then with inflation and stuff like that. Jumped up to about $800,000. And currently, the home is valued at $500,000. And people have been selling it under value. No other accounts have been reported from the home. But that being said, people may not say anything because of fear of being ridiculed and called crazy. So I just find it interesting that every time the house goes up for sale, it's sold for much less than market value, even though that house is easily a $1 million home now. Would it be a case that I would go on? So I would definitely love to go and investigate the Amityville home. I would like to check out the spot that they consider to be the red room. I didn't touch on that. There's a little spot in the home. I believe it's located under the staircase. In a closet kind of space. In the movie and the book, it's described as being hidden behind a bookcase. But in the actual home, it's just a very flush-mounted door that looks kind of hidden. And anyways, it's described that the dog is fearful of that room. That's kind of like the origin room of where all this stuff was coming from. So that'd be a fun place to investigate. I would just like to see the home. The home is absolutely gorgeous. If you have the opportunity, Google images of the Amityville home. The address currently has been changed from 112 Ocean Avenue to 108 Ocean Avenue. So if you look up that on like Zillow or any of those sites, you can get really cool images of the home. And it's a beautiful home. It's a beautiful home with a sad past. Now, this film is great because it is based again on a book. And the book is completely based on the interview between Jay Anson and George Lutz. They had a sit down and they spoke. So whether there's bullshit in this or not, I mean, that's really hard for us to say. I'm sure the Hollywood version of it really threw a lot of extra stuff in there just to make it look interesting. But based on the book, if you've ever had a chance to read the book, entitled The Amityville Horror, A True Story, again by Jay Anson, you get a real sense of what was going on there. It's very well written, and again, the source material is straight from the horse's mouth of what George and Kathleen experienced.
So if you haven't already, make sure to check out the 1979 horror classic, The Amityville Horror, available on DVD and Blu-ray on Amazon.com.
If you've enjoyed this episode or any of our other shows and would like us to continue to provide constant quality content, please consider becoming a patron sponsor. Join our Patreon campaign and help us fund future episodes. The link is located in the podcast description. Make sure to also rate our show in whichever podcast platform you're listening from so we can reach a wider audience. Also, visit our website at www.ghostsetc.com and become a member. It's 100% free, and there you can connect with fellow paranormal enthusiasts to discuss our show and even share your own stories. I look forward to meeting our community. Thank you so much for joining me on my never-ending quest through the world of the paranormal. Until next week,
My name is Nico Fontaine, and you've been listening to Ghosts Etc.